Yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I'm Jack Allen. First, go hit up my socials and follow me if you're not already at Kojak Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, at Conspiracy or JAC. And if you want to support the show, I got Venmo, Conspiracy or JAC. You can DM me for details or whatever. And I'm so thankful for the support I have. People have been leaving reviews. You guys rock. Spotify now has reviews. So if you could leave one there, I'd be honored. If you use Spotify, don't download Spotify to leave a review. But thanks for all the support, guys. It means so much. I think that's all the business stuff. Yeah, I think that's about it. Go follow me. If you want to support the show, leave a review. That's it. I don't think there's anything else. So today's show is with my friend named Lux, and he's on the Occult Rejects with NY Patriot. This is his first interview, so I am breaking ground here, everybody. So you heard it here first on Code Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Lux's story with the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Really awesome stuff. Like, just crazy. It just confirms more and more of what I believe about the occult. And there is an immediate response. We talk about that at the end of the show, that these people involved in these secret magic groups, that something's reaching back out. And this just confirms my faith in Christianity even more, because the opposite is true. So that solidifies that the Bible and Jesus, that is the way to combat this occult magic that seeps into our lives, that the elites all take part in. So awesome episode. So interesting. We had a great chat. Thanks for we had 10 or 12 people in the chat at one time. I was amazed. So thank you guys. That's so nice that you spend your Friday evening with me. But go follow Lux at Lux AETH. And I'll put his stuff in the show notes. And he's starting his own podcast soon. So check him out there as well. It's going to be called Lux Rising. And I think he's working on that now. This might be the first episode you post on it. But yes, go follow Lux. Go follow, listen to their Occult Rejects podcast. And support the show if you want to support the show. But I'm honored that you guys listen. So thanks, everybody. I hope you're doing well. Hopefully you're having a nice Friday. And you have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves, love yourselves, be proud of who you are. As always, promote family, God, love, and keep your heads up, because it's going to get rougher before it gets better, but we are building a community, and you should be honored and proud of yourself that you are part of that community. We're a part of that community that is essentially the biggest roadblock into the mainstream media to steamroll everybody and the fake elites and all that stuff. It's us. That's it. That is who calls out their narrative, who questions what they say. And then, you know, these like Con Inc. pundits pick it up and they'll take some of the stuff that we started. But be proud, dude. There's so few people. Think of how small our community is, how many people there are that don't care, that don't pay attention, that just believe what they're told. And we're not one of them. So something to be proud of. Again, do what we can to better ourselves. Thank you for listening. Here's the show with Lux. He's an awesome guy, and it's a great episode. All right, everyone. I am Jack Allen from Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. And thanks for listening, guys. Talk to you soon. Peace. All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. So today, I have the counterpart of the Occult Rejects, the famous Lux. Lux, thanks for being on the show, dude, and welcome.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on. And it's kind of funny. This is the first interview that I've done outside of the Occult Rejects.
Wow, dude. Well, I'm honored that you would grace me with your presence, dude.
Oh, it couldn't be better. Seriously, there are a lot of different podcasts out there, and some of them have really great information. And I count yours as one of those. You really kill it. And
dude, too nice.
You're a treasure to the podcast.
Oh, dude, you're going to make me blush. No more, no more. Well, so for any, like, we see these names of these groups all the time, like over and over again. And so why don't you tell everybody that doesn't know, I guess, like about your background, what you were in, and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. So I'm a former member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. There are a bunch of different groups that all kind of claim that name. I won't go too deep into the exact lineage of the one that I was in, just simply for identity purposes. But I did a lot of research before I decided to join a specific secret society and chose the Golden Dawn. Yeah.
That's interesting. Continue. I don't want to interrupt. I already got a question, but continue. Continue.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, what kind of research?
Well, when you look at the Golden Dawn, there, like I said, there's a bunch of different groups that all use the same name. But I wanted to kind of go back as far as I could to figure out who was the most legitimate. And that's why I chose the one that I did, which tends to take a lot of, lineage from sort of the same order that Crowley was in. Mm-hmm. So that's how I narrowed down my search.
Okay. Interesting.
And not because I was interested in Crowley. I had made that very specific from the jump when I was being interviewed and sort of the initiation process, that I did not want anything to do with, you know, Thelemic magic or Crowley, because it was my understanding that Crowley had left the Golden Dawn because they had these huge differences. And that's why I decided to pick that certain order, because I felt like they were going to be further away from Thelemic magic or anything to do with Crowley.
Ah, wow. So what is, and I like, what is Thelemic magic? That's what Crowley is known for, right?
Definitely. And he's an interesting figure. It's like, it's almost a polarizing figure.
Yeah.
It's like when you hear magic, you immediately associate it with Crowley.
Yeah.
But the Golden Dawn, yeah, it was, you know, all centered around ritual magic or ceremonial magic. And that's really why I decided to go with this order, because I wanted to join an order that had structure, because I was looking at all these different other orders and it seemed as though either it was you sending them money and then they would send you sort of like this, you know, like things in the mail just so that you could study and look over. And I wanted something much deeper than that. I wanted to find an order that I could get into that would really be something, I would say, more collegiate, if okay. that makes sense, or something right. that, you know, was more structured.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So what kind of, like, I guess this is like a silly question, but like, what, how do you guys study, like, say, what is like step one of coming into these type of groups?
I would say each one is slightly different depending okay. again on which order it is that you decide to join. The Golden Dawn, at least, it was about a year vetting process of where they really
wow.
tried to find everything that they could about me. I had to share. I know it sounds goofy, but you would even have to include your deepest, darkest secret, things that you had never told anyone wow. else on your initial papers that you have to send in to them. And then there were even like these weird circumstances where I swore, and I'm not sure if it's totally true, but even in that first year of initiatory process, I swore that it would seem like there were these weird circumstances where people would kind of like pop up in my life and kind of ask certain questions. And I always wondered if maybe that was part of the vetting process. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Dude, though, that sounds like, I mean, a lot of like, I'm not calling it a cult, but a lot of cults, you know, they have that similar, like your deepest, or, and they use it as a, I guess it makes you probably feel more connected. And also the reverse is like blackmail, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that, because I mean, if you haven't even been initiated yet and you're about to share your deepest, darkest secrets,
right?
That's Dude. that's a bit much to ask off of the jump, you know?
So you do this. So it took you a year to get in about.
Yeah, roughly about that. Yeah.
So you pass all their tests or whatever. And already most people can't stick with anything a year. So I'm at like, when you hear these groups, you think like outcasts kind of, and I'm not trying to say that offend, you know.
Oh,
like,
no, that's why we call ourselves the rejects. So.
But the fact that you stuck with it a year, I mean, you clearly had a lot of drive to do this. So you get it, right? I mean, obviously.
I did, for sure.
Yeah. So you get in, and now you've made it past the year. So what's the net? Like, what do you guys start, like, you've been reading this whole time about the Golden Dawn, or you're reading about rituals, or what are you, you know, studying?
Sure. So just a bit of a backstory to the whole thing of why I even decided to join
was yeah.
because I had seen, and this was in the early 2000s, I had seen so many crazy things that I was considering conspiracy, right? I had seen world events from politics to all this other stuff. And based on that research that I had done, I said, whoa, magic is definitely influencing society. It's influencing everyone. And I thought to myself, well, maybe if I really get into this magic stuff that I can understand occult principles that these people do, that they know, and that's how they're able to control certain situations in society. Either I can keep myself away from that because I understand the process, or I can help to protect myself from it.
Hmm.
So that's the whole motivation of
yeah.
really why I even got in, because I just wanted to protect myself from it. But also I saw, and this might sound cheesy, but I had seen so many people affected in the world by the occult and magic that I felt as though the reason, like one of the number one reasons why I would want to join one of these societies, which I had vetted. So to make sure that they were a good group, that because if they were using light magic or good magic, that maybe I could use it to help other people.
No, that's a noble goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because I had tried so hard to make sure that whatever group I was going into wasn't involved in this black or gray magic. But, you know, during that time period of when I first applied to the actual initiation, there were a bunch of different things that I had to do, such as like journaling. There was a practice where you would sit down at the end of every day and you would take a journal and you would write down as much as you could about every event of your day.
Okay.
And this was for like memory retention, but also to help you to be aware of how conscious you were of your own mind during your entire day. And there were a bunch of different rituals that I was told to do. And that was all before even initiation.
What little, besides the journey, do you like any other like specific type of rituals?
Yeah. So the number one ritual for any starter magician would be the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. And that's a ritual that's done with certain movements. And you can do it two times a day, usually at the sunrise or sunset.
Okay.
And it is about banishing planetary energies or outside forces that can influence sort of like what you do through the day. So,
yeah,
because, you know, for magic, or especially in the Golden Dawn, astrology affects a lot of people, and to block those energies from affecting you, that's what that ritual is more or less supposed to do.
That's crazy, dude. So you would wake up, you know, I'm not saying every morning, but most mornings, and at dusk or sunset, you would do what? And they, at this point, were you like just communicating through like writing, or were you going some, like you had maybe like a mentor, for a lack of a better term?
I didn't at that time. That was just all sort of my own thing. And then
okay,
I would have to show before my actual initiation into the Golden Dawn. This whole journal to make sure that I had actually said what I was doing. But it's like, they take it from the perspective that, well, like, have you ever woken up and felt kind of weird on one day? And you're like, man, why do I feel so weird today? Why do I feel so down or depressed? Mm-hmm. Or
right.
Well, other days I feel so great. And it seems to come in these different patterns. Well, the whole purpose of that ritual is to nullify all of those outside influences. Mm. So.
Interesting, dude. Wow. So, and then, so continue with what, I don't know, I'm interrupted somewhere. Journaling, then that, and then, yes.
So, you know, it's definitely not cheap to get into these orders. Well, at least into the Golden Dawn, I can say. There was a lot of money that was spent, because you have to buy robes, you have to buy a bunch of different regalia and stuff. This is before you even get in. And if you don't have the money, sometimes they may help you slightly, but their philosophy is more or less, if you don't have the money, then go and find it.
Right. Dude. And, well, continue.
It at that time for me, I was like, oh, they're totally right. I'm not doing a good enough job of getting enough money to buy these, no joke, like $300 robes.
Jeez.
And that's just one part of the robe.
Where do you get that? Is there a robe store on the internet, or Amazon? You type in robe. Where do you get a expensive, I'm sure it's like a silk or something, like natural material robe?
Yeah, I had to go to Diagon Alley.
Yeah. And nice. If I was a comedian, we could have made a few good jokes. That was the best one there. Nice. That was good. That was good.
Oh, but there is a couple websites. Okay. And even looking back in retrospect, I should have seen how obvious it was that multiple orders are all connected. Because when I went on this website, which the Golden Dawn pointed me to, mm-hmm. there were other orders included in the website.
Wow.
It was a very specific website that they wanted me to buy the robes from, because they had to be the right length. They had to be the right, you know, color, shape, and all of that kind of stuff.
Right. So. Yeah. Wow, dude, that is wild. And so you get your robe, you get, you know, you have your, like, I guess, like an admittance test type of thing to make sure, right? That's, I would assume,
yeah,
how you officially get in.
Mm-hmm. So there was a, you know, like I said, a giant questionnaire that they would always ask you about during that first year of trying to get in. And I mean, they would ask you things from like, you know, who is one of your biggest role models? Why? And they would want you to write an essay on why that person is your biggest role model. And then, you know, like I said, we would have to get all of these different types of regalia or clothing in order to even be initiated. And it was very specific, even down to socks, things like that. You would never think that would be relevant, but they took it very seriously.
Damn, dude, that's crazy. And then, like, so what type of people are in your, like, group with you? Like, I would imagine, again, like, I think clearly if you need this kind of money, it's not like kids, it's people that take this very seriously. So is there all walks of life that are members of this, of these kind of type of groups?
So I guess we'll start at initiation.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
I get to initiation, and I was told before that would even happen, that I had to meet them at a random location that I wouldn't know about until around maybe an hour, 2 hours before.
Okay.
And at the time, I lived out of state. And so it was my girlfriend and myself at the time. We decided that we were going to go up together because she was kind of worried about the fact that I was going to meet these people I didn't know. I knew nothing about them. Who knows what can happen, right?
Right. Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. Yeah.
So we go and we had gotten a hotel room and booked in and then went to this restaurant. And she, my girlfriend at the time, refused to let me do this by myself. So we go to the restaurant and I don't see anybody there. And I'm thinking, this is strange. I'm texting people. I don't hear anything back because they had given me a number. And I'm looking around the restaurant. I didn't see anybody. And so I stepped outside for a second. I get a phone call and they told me that they were already inside and that they were at like the back end of the restaurant and they had already seen me get there and just to come back and sit down and talk to them. So I walk back in and I sit down and there were three people. And one of them, well, two of them, but one of them was way higher up than the others. Okay. And I had to sit down and talk to them. And I remember from that first interaction, something was really weird because I had always thought, especially when you look at the Golden Dawn, they always treat themselves as this very professional. It's this school for magic. It's very strict. There's no funny business. And mm-hmm. I remember sitting down and one of the guys told me, and he looked right at my girlfriend at the time and said, "Don't worry, this isn't the initiation where we do him in the, you know what."
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah.
Well, that would scare off any significant other in the world right off the bat.
And he, of course, made it in this very joking manner. Okay. And so you're nervous, you're scared, whatever. Yes. And you're just, ha, 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 that's funny, you know, because you hear that a lot about secret societies. That might be something that they do. And I just will never forget that. It made me feel so unsettled, but I continued to go through with it.
Right, right. Well, you like made it this far already. You know, it's kind of like getting hazed in a fraternity type of, you know, you already made it this far. Yeah.
So we end up wrapping up eating and she was going to follow me. My girlfriend was going to follow me to the location for initiation and they told her that she could not.
Okay.
And I was blindfolded and put into the back of their car. And taken off to the place where I was going to get initiated. So I know that a lot of that might sound fantastical or wild.
Yeah.
But it was traumatic. And especially thinking back on it now, even getting back after that day of initiation, I was pretty traumatized. But yeah, so we get to the building that the initiation is happening. And the first thing I'm told to do is to go and pick a rose from the rose garden that was in front of the lodge, I guess you could say. So I pick it. And at the time, I was really sick. This was before, you know, of course, before
yes.
coronavirus.
Moment. Yeah, when people could get regular sick. Yes.
And I felt terrible. And, you know, I'm like, I'm putting on these robes. They're telling me, you know, don't have anything else underneath of your robes. You're just going to stay here blindfolded in one part of the lodge and we're going to come and get you. I can hear all of the things that are happening on the lower level underneath of me at the bottom part of the lodge. And they're doing these different rituals for initiation. So I'm blindfolded. I'm led down to the lower level. there's a bunch of different things that they make you swear to, or, you know, they have you repeat all of these different sayings. Then there's this long process of you doing this initiation ritual and partaking of, I would say they would call it a communion. And then after that, you're officially initiated, and that's how that day ended. So,
wow. And then they just drove you back to the wherever.
Well, they wouldn't let me have my girlfriend at the time pick me up.
Okay. Kind of, I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't want her to know the location, so they drove me back. So that's how that went. And then when I got back to where, you know, the hotel, I mean, my ex-girlfriend, she was in a mess. She was like, I haven't heard from you, because they told me, don't contact her while you're here. Stop asking about locations of where to, you know, she can pick you up and all that kind of stuff. So,
dude, that's like a terrifying, you know, you have no idea who these people are already. They're, you know, I don't want to say unsavory, but different to say the least.
Right.
I mean, that anyone would be terrified of that.
And I still went through with it.
Well, I think it's like you say that, but like, you know, people like this is like a common thing with groups. Like I just said, like the fraternity thing, like people do. And especially you start off harmless and then you just keep getting further and it's like, I don't know if it's like human nature or what it is, but you know, we're not like good at that. Looking hindsight, it's easy, but end the time, it's not so easy.
Well, and especially because I had made it so, so clear that I did not want anything to do with black magic. I didn't want anything to do with thelemic magic, which is more associated with the OTO, which is the order that, you know, my co-host for the Occult Rejects is. He was formerly in the OTO. And they really center more around like thelemic magic and stuff. And I just didn't want anything to do with it because it was with Crowley. So I felt as though by me putting that out there so far in advance before even initiation, and they reassured me so much, well, no, that's not something you're going to get into. That there was this thing where I believed that even though this weird stuff was happening for initiation, that they were telling me the truth, or that I had some type of reassurance because they had told me that I wouldn't get into that type of magic or occult practices I disagreed with. So,
yeah. So you're initiated. What's, and how many years were you involved with the Golden Dawn?
I won't go into it too much as far as like the time length, because it tends to, especially with these specific groups, it tends to narrow things down.
Oh, yeah. Ballpark it.
Yeah. Ballpark. I would say at least 5 years.
Okay. So you were in it for a while. You know, you knew these people very well. What are like, so you, do you rise the ranks through, I got like a two part. So how do you like rise the ranks? And then also like, can you give examples of like, because, you know, I've read so much about Parsons and stuff, and like, and kind of like how you said earlier, collegiate scholar, like, I mean, even that, my one friend who I was talking to you before the show, Jeremy, I mean, he's super smart guy, so well read, like this stuff is out like a science, like these rituals, correct? So
definitely.
Yeah. So two parts. So how do you rise the ranks, and can you like, what examples of like I guess like a ritual or spell or whatever you want to call it?
Mm-hmm. So the Golden Dawn, they pride themselves on being one of the oldest orders, or the one that has the most lineage or like background that proves their legitimacy. Mm-hmm. And so I was pretty confident in that. And so I really started to do a lot of these rituals that they were telling me about. And it's very specific on movement, the vibration of your voice when you do these rituals, certain what they call God names, which in retrospect, I now have sort of after getting out, I've deciphered a lot of what that ritual was, and definitely see discrepancies I don't agree with, because a lot of the names that they're telling you to vibrate are certain gods that I don't agree with now at all. And even at the time, I was pretty nervous about it. But you're essentially moving around in a clockwise fashion, and you're drawing a pentagram in the air with your hand. And so you start at your left hip, and you go up to the top of your head, then down to the bottom right side of your hip, then back up to the left side of your shoulder, to the right shoulder, and then back down to the left hip. And those, each one of the times that you draw this pentagram in the air, you visualize it in your mind's eye. You're putting it into your space. And after a while of doing it for so long, I could actually see what I was drawing with my hand in the air fabricate. I know that sounds wacky, but, and maybe that was in my mind's eye or whatever, but I don't think it was. And
you mean like you could see it in your head when you say your mind's eye?
I could see it physically.
Damn, dude, that is crazy. Wow. Yeah.
And I remember even thinking when I first started to see it manifest physically, I was like, wait, this has got to be just something I'm making up.
Right. Yes. Or like, am I going insane? That's what I would think of. Yeah.
Right. And they would even warn me. They would say, look, when you do these rituals for long enough, you're going to start to see these things actually happen. And you would connect. You would do four separate corners for each one of the, you know, cardinal directions. And you would connect each one of those pentagrams with a, you know, sort of like a shining, bright, brilliant blue cord that connected all of them, so that you would eventually create a barrier around yourself. And then what you would do is, once you've created that barrier, you would invoke archangels. So, you know, Michael, Gabriel, archangels like that. And you would have them on sort of like the perimeter of your ritual, either looking in or looking out to protect you, or looking in to give wisdom. And then you would, of course, make the sign of the cross, which is, you know, the same sign as the Christian cross.
Okay.
And then you would, you know, do sort of like an ending prayer, and that was it.
Wow, dude. What's the, as you can see, I'm like putting pictures up. I keep seeing like the Christian cross. What, why is it like, why do you know why they associate? Is it just a powerful symbol?
Well, so for the Golden Dawn, you know, of course, why they call themselves the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn is because it has a lot of association with Christianity or the Christ figure. But that being because they relate the Golden Dawn, Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, with Hermes, which was a, you know, second century figure. He was an Egyptian priest and a magician. He was also called the, you know, thrice great Hermes. He wrote like 42 books. They were all about esoteric wisdom and literature, including things I'm sure people have heard about, like the golden tablets and stuff like that.
Yes, of like Thoth or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Am I getting that wrong?
Well, like roughly. Definitely you're not far off. But like, he was said to be this thrice great figure, which is very similar to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost that we see in Christianity. So that's why you see a lot of that symbolism in the Golden Dawn. You see a lot of that same cross symbolism in Rosicrucianism. other things. So, which really boils down to what they're trying to say is the mind, the heart, and action is what these three, you know, Father, Son, Holy Spirit are representing in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
So, like, what's, you guys have like meetings, I'm guessing, like periodically that you would, or like, is that like a monthly meeting, or what is that's how you guys would stay in contact with each other?
Yeah, it was very strict in the sense that there were always, I had a mentor and I had to talk to him almost daily, and it was reporting what you have, you know, diaried today. What rituals have you done today? What's your next step? Like, how do you want to go from here? Do you want to go up another rank? Do you want to go up another grade? And it was pretty rigorous. I would akin it something to being at least in an associate's degree in college.
It almost reminds me, dude, of like AA or NA, like you have a sponsor and how you just said steps. It's like a similar, you check in with them all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, part of that is a lot about control, in my opinion, because they want to see what you're researching, because honestly, that's one of the reasons why I left at the end of it. We don't have to jump that far ahead, but that's some of the stuff that I was finding when I was researching Golden Dawn material that was given to me from them. I started to sort of make my own connections to other stuff that I was researching, and there was like this weird gatekeeping thing where they didn't want me to ask certain questions about certain material. And to me, I thought, well, you know, that obviously doesn't apply if you're in let's say you're in college, right? And you're like, wow, I'm researching this book. And I ask my professor about it. And he says, well, yeah, don't research that.
Right.
So immediately I felt as though something was fishy because of the fact that there was this gatekeeping of information where it was, you could only talk about that if you got to a certain level.
Ah, okay. And that almost encouraged you to look. Now you ask, why can't I look into this type of human behavior? You know, don't think of an elephant, you're going to think of an elephant.
Exactly. And see, the type of person that I am, like the moment that they said that to me, don't research this more, I immediately researched it more.
And when you say like research, like I, you know, on these pictures we have up, they're all like Golden Dawn books. Is that what the research is? That's what they encourage, is like whatever these, I'm going to call them textbooks, but these textbooks they have, they're encouraging you to read through these and give your thoughts.
Right. So each grade that you have in the Golden Dawn, like I said, it's very college-like. You have this giant curriculum that you have to digest, send back to them, and they need to see proof of it, all the stuff that you've done. Well, I happen to be researching, because I'm kind of always been into physics. I just find physics really fascinating. I really like space and you know, astrology, things like that. Mm-hmm. Just something I really enjoyed of research because I love it. Well, I was looking into, it's something called M theory. So it's basically like the most modern idea, or hypothesis as the way that modern astrophysics believe that certain dimensions are connected. And I began to see that there were these weird connections to that and the Kabbalah. And if you stop scrolling right there, you'll see that that is a version of right there. So if you look at that shape, that's what the Golden Dawn views as the Kabbalah. This is how you move up and out of certain dimensions. And just because of the shapes, right, because of the shapes that are on there, and all their different colors and the way they're aligned, I just happened to be looking at this physics book and was finding that if you look at M theory, which is has nothing to do with the occult, this is just science,
yeah,
that they believe the dimensions are connected in certain ways, and you could literally superimpose the image that these guys, like these astrophysicists, were describing the way the dimensions connect to the Kabbalah of the Golden Dawn. And all I did was reach out to the person who was above me. I said, whoa, finding like a lot of weird connections. Like, is the Kabbalah, is it the same thing as this? Are they talking about how certain dimensions connect or whatever? They pretty much told me, shut up, don't ask about it, and go back to, you know, your normal studies.
Dude, the whole dimension thing, was it like, do they believe that you, like, kind of like a multiverse theory, I'm guessing, right? That, like, yeah, you can cross, there's, it's like, but, and when you say, like, travel to these other dimensions, do they think, or are they able to see other, like, what's in these other ones? I don't know how I'm asking this right.
I definitely get what you're saying. So, at least from the Golden Dawn's perspective, a lot of other occult groups, that they take this model, which, so this is pretty much the heart of occultism for high magic, or, you know, stuff that really digs deep into occultism, not things like, you know, doing spells with certain, like, herbs and crystals, and yeah, I have nothing wrong with that. That's totally fine. People can do that. That's totally cool. I'm not criticizing that at all. But when it comes to the Golden Dawn, they take this version, the Tree of Life, which was passed down from the Hebrews, to show how each dimension or version of dimensions is connected. And in the Golden Dawn, they explain that if you were to make yourself, I wouldn't say pure, but aligned, that you could more or less astral travel between certain dimensions in on the tree.
Dude, that, and also about the 11 dimension, I don't know if it was like Rogan that I was listening to a long time ago or something, and there was a guy on there who was a physicist who said they've confirmed that there's 11 dimensions that exist or something like that. And then he also said, and it's interesting because Kabbalah or Judaism also was saying the same thing thousands of years ago, or, you know.
Yeah, you're spot on. And so those were the same questions that I was asking. When you look at this modern, you know, astrophysics, this looks a lot like the Tree of Life. And each one of those, so it, like when you look at modern astrophysics, they kind of have this weird disagreement with things called M theory, string theory, and where they sort of argue about how many dimensions there could be. But the most common one that they all agree on is that they're are at least 10 to 11 different dimensions. Well, if you look at the Tree of Life, right?
Yeah.
You have 10 separate spheres, and then there's one that's invisible in the center. They call that the Doth sphere in the occult. So that would, you know, be the 11th sphere. So yeah, I was asking about all this stuff and just told not to pay attention to it, and I did not like, because I felt like, you know, I don't need to be told everything, but at least help me out here. I'm trying to make some connections. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And that's super interesting. Like, that would be, I would need to know the, you know, that's like super interesting. So why, that's why I would ask, do you have an idea why? Is it just because they wanted, I remember like that story of like Jack Parsons, how he wasn't ready for, like, or Crowley or whoever didn't think he was ready for the next steps, and he was doing things that he thought he couldn't handle. Do you think that's their excuse of why they didn't want you to look into this stuff more, or what do you think their reason is?
I'm not totally sure, but one thing I do know is that they were really interested in things like my birth date. They wanted to know down to the minute that I was born. And they kind of put people in these different categories because the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn at least believes that people who are born in certain star signs or something like that, different astrological signs, have certain dispositions.
Okay.
And they think that it corresponds to one of those spheres on the tree. And I think also some of it is that they want to gatekeep the information so that even someone who's like, you know, stupid as me
could make stupid, that connection. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, who could make that connection wouldn't kind of figure out the whole total picture. Because I think that if you really were to break it down and figure out what that really means, that it could make a lot of changes, especially not only in oneself, but in the world around us, because as long as these societies, as long as these groups keep this information secret, they're the only ones with that real info.
Yeah.
So to me, it felt like that was the goal.
Well, dude, I also, like, I don't know anything. I'm like, I know what sign I am and stuff like that, but I never realized how truly important, like, the astrology was to these, like, our, you know, the founding fathers and all these, and Masons, which I'm sure there's, like, lots of crossover, but, like, they, everything in the DC, it was, like, the exact minute they laid the westward facing cornerstone of the White House or whatever it may be. It was all timed like perfectly in the exact location to match these stars in the sky. I mean, they really do put all of this emphasis on this, the astrological layout.
Oh, absolutely. And the reason why they do that is because at certain hours, certain days, certain planets or energies are more active. And so you can, through rituals, bring that energy down into your reality or your, you know, experience on Earth.
Mm.
So if you, like, let's say the third sphere on the Tree of Life is called Bana. And it's typically like a female energy. And when pushed to the extreme, it enacts chaos. It's associated with Saturn, and it can really, if you channel that energy into yourself or into your reality, it can cause a lot of chaos. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is sort of like the stuff that we were researching lately for the Occult Rejects.
Right.
It seems as though that they are trying to channel that specific energy down into our reality, which, and even if you don't believe in the Tree of Life, that's fine, but when you're channeling that type of energy of negativity, of chaos, you know, it's going to manifest, it's going to happen. So that's the reason why they use that type of that energy, because it's right. Very effective at keeping people divided.
Well, do you think, like, so what's the, like, your, you know, your groups, what's the goal of, like, is there a displayed goal of, like, these lodges or the Golden Dawn, like, you know, or do they just kind of like a generic, you know, we're trying to make the world a better place type of slogan?
Oh, they definitely try and make it that way. But the reason why I ended up leaving was because, so I'm in this group for years. And again, this is, that kind of happened early on where I was trying to figure out the, you know, the M theory stuff and, and, you know, how it corresponds to the Tree of Life. And I would notice that over time, I would look in my curriculum and I would see these weird edits. Imagine if you had like a college you know, a college book on some type of subject that you were studying, but at the top of it, you would see that it was edited so that it no longer said the actual, I guess, publisher of the book.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, this is weird. Like, why do they have
yeah
this part edited? And I would notice that they would leave some of the parts out, that they didn't obviously edit everything. And I would see other names of other secret societies in my curriculum. And I was like, whoa, okay, this is weirding me out. So I ended up talking to them and I said, I'm seeing groups that have nothing to do with the Golden Dawn in our curriculum. Can someone please explain this to me?
Yeah.
And they said, well, don't worry about it. It's above your pay grade, more or less.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll figure it out when you get there. And so they told me basically that there is a inner order to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. And this inner order works with theoretical magic. And then within that order is another inner order, which is almost by invite only. And it that inner order connects to other secret societies, sort of creating a web of, it's like a challenge. So you go through this process of the Golden Dawn. Well, then you go to the inner order, but then there's an inner order beyond that. And so it's a constant test of seeing who they will allow to get into that inner order.
That's crazy. Like the connect. So this like double, no like joke, but like a double secret order is like this link that's linking all of these similar groups.
Yeah. And we would even have times, and this was something I immediately thought was very strange, but thought it was routine after a while, was that we would go to Masonic lodges. Because at that point, I thought to myself, wait a minute, why am I going to, I'm not a Mason, why am I going to Masonic lodges and doing rituals there? Because you hear a lot of Masons that say, oh, well, the Masons don't have anything to do with magic. It's just, you know, it's something different. Mm-hmm. But in reality, we would go there after hours from permission from the, you know, high ranking Masons. And we would do these rituals in their lodges. So even from that aspect, if you want to say, well, the Masons and the Golden Dawn are disconnected, then why would you allow us to go and do these different rituals inside of the lodge after the other Masons are gone? Because a lot of the other Masons who are low level, they don't think that any of the magic rituals and stuff is going to be involved in Masonry. It is, it's just at a higher level. And so they were more or less like letting us use their space to do these rituals.
And you would do them together, like the high ranking Masons and you guys.
No, I won't say that. No, it was just the Golden Dawn there using their space.
Okay. All right.
But it was weird to me though, because there were other places that we could have done that.
Yeah.
I don't know why we had to do it in a Masonic lodge, and especially without a lot of other people who were Masons in that lodge even knowing about it.
So what do you think the point was to go to do it there then? If like they,
I don't know. Maybe because I think that when you do certain rituals over and over and over again, or there's certain practices that have been done in a certain space over and over again, it might create some type of charge or some, I don't know, ability for rituals to become more effective.
Mm. And like these group ones, what was the goal of these group? Like, you know, because you're obviously doing a specific thing with specific movements and thoughts and energies or whatever. Like, say, like just a random meeting on a Tuesday that you all get together to do a group. Is there like a goal that's stated in these group rituals?
Yeah, there would be certain meetings that you would go to try and just sort of talk and interchange different ideas. And then there were other meetings where it was about like astral projection or crossing the abyss, which they claimed that you could, you know, move along certain timelines and find information from the past. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God, dude, you're a time traveler.
Yeah, and it's really wild to me because when I was doing it, I definitely saw some weird things, and you know, years later, of course, after we started the new podcast, I ended up finding this document from the CIA that was talking about the Gateway Project, which was a 10-year project that the CIA had done along with this sort of like occultist guy, where they were figuring out how you could use certain tones and vibrations to access different places and times in the past. And they spent millions of dollars on that.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me to see that these entities were researching occult principles, and sort of just like calling them something else. So it felt to me, at least, that there was way more legitimacy for what I had been doing before, because, you know, you cannot.
Yeah,
I'm doing all these types of astral projections or meditations, and I always kind of thought to myself, well, maybe I'm making a lot of this up in my head or something.
Right.
And then years later, find out that they were really researching this on a high level to figure out how it works.
I remember reading somewhere like how they had a guy that was astral projecting remote viewing. And they spent all this money on remote viewing. And like, they would give him like just coordinates, and like he could tell you exactly where it was. And like there one time was like two guys standing by a water fountain, and he was able to like say where they were. And then they even like gave him coordinates on Mars, and I don't know.
Exactly.
Just crazy stuff that it was just sounded like fake, you know, it sounded totally made up. Exactly.
Right. And if you look at that document too, it's very bizarre because they break down how they, in their own words, again, this is like the CIA and government organizations, they say, oh, well, we tell the public one thing about physics and the way that things operate, but in reality, it's much different. And they continue to reference all of these occult books and literature and doctrine, and then say, oh, well, yeah, it's really this way. We just tell the public one thing. And this is how we're able to do a bunch of other crazy stuff with, you know, astral projection or out of body experiences.
What was the biggest, like, because how you said when you first started, you were able to see the pentagram that you were drawing. What was like, is there another one, like the biggest thing that like blew your, that like almost maybe scared you, or like, you were like, shit, this actually, like, I'm getting a response, or whatever you want to, like a moment or an event.
Sure. And when I talk about these things, it's not necessarily about, I will never make the claim that what I did or what I experienced was good. I am absolutely willing to admit that during those experiences and what I saw was not positive. And, you know, it's a lot of misconception about, I don't know, that people think that the occult is either good or bad. I tend to think of the occult as like an underlying system, the same way that electricity is. You know, you can use electricity to shock someone. You can use electricity to help light a light bulb. And those two effects of electricity have two very different, you know, outcomes. So right. I, in my opinion, I think that the occult is a misunderstood or maybe lost system as to the way that things operate, especially when it comes to the human psyche, because 99% of the occult does not have anything to do with you, you know, holding a wand or anything. It's more about the deep understanding of the human psyche, and how people operate. What are their, you know, what are the good things about themselves? What are the bad things about themselves?
Damn, dude, that makes so much. That's like, I'm always searching. What's the tie between the occult and the intelligence apparatus? And from what, like you just said, that seems like that's what one of the main connections is.
Absolutely. And they have a very deep understanding about the human psyche and how to manipulate people just because of occult principles. Of these things that, you know, occultists have studied for thousands of years, and they have figured out a way to hack the system. That's really what occultism, I would say, totally is. And then meanwhile, keeping it away from the majority of the public.
Yeah. Right. And that, so you have like a cheat code. You're able to know and do things that regular Joe Schmo wouldn't be able to or have access to.
Yeah.
Then
you did.
Go ahead.
You did have a question that I forgot what the first part of the last question was that you had asked.
God, like from 20 minutes ago? That one?
No. It was like, it was right before I got onto that. It was
the biggest experience.
Oh, yes. Biggest experience.
So, good. Yes. Nice.
So I would do these different rituals. And like I had told you, I would see these pentagrams that I was drawing in the air. I could see them with my physical eyes. Wasn't me keeping them closed or anything. And one big warning that the Golden Dawn always told you is that you will see things after you start to do these rituals over a long time, that you will start to see things in your normal life that may not be absolutely real to everyone else, but you're going to see them. And this is a very, very common theme that you look into any type of ritualistic magic or occultism. You'll see all of these types of groups agree that after you do these rituals, that you'll begin to see things that other people can't. And I would remember being in a room and seeing an object or a animal or a shape that other people couldn't see. And that weirded me out so bad. It made me feel like it was hard to decipher. Like, what does this mean? What does this mean? I mean, that happened multiple times. And that was something that definitely made me uncomfortable. And I didn't want to be existing in this place where I felt that other people couldn't see things that I was seeing. It's just
right.
So,
well, you'll think, am I going crazy or what? It's just fascinating to you that something like, I always like say this in my show, but like people, you know, like you and all other people that were in, like, people wouldn't do this stuff if they didn't get like an immediate, like, response, like a, you know, reciprocated for their efforts. Cause you think, like, you know, praying, you don't get like a okay sign or a thumbs up or whatever. So that's, you know, I think that, especially in this modern age of like instant gratification, we, you know, that pushes people away. But would you agree that, like, clearly something, you get a sign that something or is responding by doing these rituals and these meditations?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would see in some cases, I would see immediate results. And they were prolific, they were intense, and they were very real in the physical form. I remember that I would kind of mess around with certain rituals, and I would even think about, okay, like, let me take this ritual and ask for the most bizarre, wild thing. And I did a ritual that was asking to find a $5 bill, because I thought that was like really specific. And I did this ritual, and after I finished, I closed out the ritual. I walked out to my car to go to work, and I looked down under the front driver's side of my car underneath the tire, and there was a $5 bill that was lodged underneath it.
That is crazy, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I stood there for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, right. Staring like, what the hell?
Yeah. And a lot of those results are way more immediate than people think. I do think there's some type of response to rituals. Certain ones are short term, some are much longer term. So,
dude. And then I guess my last question. So what was the final, like the camel that broke the straw's back? What was that?
I would say the thing that really made me just stop was, again, after I'd been researching the physics stuff and then being told not to look into it, then finding out that there were inner orders that connected to other inner orders. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really broke it for me was that I had said, based on this, things that have happened, that I needed to take a break. Like, I just was feeling really uneasy, because I felt like I was being misled. And that's the exact opposite of why I got into it into the first place. I'd also noticed that there's this weird thing that happens with occultism that you feel as though like you, and I would even see with other members, is that there was this mystique where you knew something that the general public didn't. And so you felt as though you were really cool and special because you knew these things that other people didn't. And I even like felt it start to take a toll on me, because you would see these guys come in who were from higher grades, and they would have on these giant rings. I'm talking Super Bowl rings with like, and you know, I got a ring too, and yeah, I thought I was cool because of it. And it's like, and then you go higher up in these levels, and these guys have on these giant gold rings, and it's like it can become a very egotistical thing that you think that you know more than other people, and that can lead to really bad stuff, because you know, it's not ever going to help you to realize yourself and to understand the truth and to share that truth with others. It's about gatekeeping it and keeping it only to yourself because you think for some reason that you're special. But the thing that really made me stop was that I had, because of all the things that have happened before, I had said that I wanted to get out. And they had told me that they didn't want me to. Mm-hmm. And made it pretty much pretty hard for me to get out. Being delayment in paperwork for resignations and things. And I kept pushing it. And I said, like, I'm done. And they would say, oh, we'll just take a month or a year hiatus. And I said, I'm totally done. And because of feeling that pressure, they wanted me to stay in so desperately. And I have no idea why that is, but they really tried hard for me to stay in. And because of that, I just decided that it was the last straw, because it felt like a cult.
Yeah, it kind of was the opposite of why you got into it.
Yep, exactly.
Dude, this was the one guy in the chat asked a question, and I will, about Harry Potter, and I'm interested in that too. But you see a lot of like those Harry. You think J.K. Rowling's a Hermetic Order member?
I will say that they do mix a lot of fantasy with reality in that series. I'm not sure how much she knows, but a lot of the principles that are outlined in the series of books and movies, she definitely knows something more than the normal person.
You guys haven't done a series on Harry Potter, have you?
No, not yet. No.
Damn, dude. Well, I grew up on Harry Potter, so I would love, that would be crazy. But
me too.
So where can everyone find you and listen to you guys and all those good things, Lux?
Sure. So myself and my co-host, New York Patriot, were two former Secret Society members that left because of the things we just talked about. And we decided to start our own podcast to tell people about the truth and what they're doing behind the scenes. And, we don't have it all figured out. We just try to tell people the information that we know in order to help people out. I have my own podcast that's about to come out. And that's going to be under the Lux Rising podcast.
Nice.
Just because we want to. Thanks, buddy. We just want to start I want to start something new that's just different, covering different subjects. And we have, of course, the Occult Rejects. You can find us at the Occult Rejects on any platform that podcasts are streamed, Spotify, Apple, things like that. And of course, you can always find a New York Patriot on his own stuff. And yeah, we're just trying to get our message out there as much as possible.
No, this was awesome. And you guys put, I always respect people that like research. It's so easy to like do current events and things like that. But like you guys do intense work, like super thorough. So definitely check their show out. And I'll put all the links in the show notes. But Lux, thanks for doing this, dude. I'm honored. This was your first one-on-one interview. So thank you, dude. It was awesome. I loved every minute of it. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right, man. Take care and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, buddy.
See you guys. See you, everybody. Thanks for listening.
See you.